NFL podcast. I'm literally tired as f*** of voicing these stupid things.
We've all hit our breaking points during the pandemic, and there is money's. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hens, coming to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler, what's up, boys?
What is up? I like that. Money. Telling it like it is. That's
money,
your coworker, though. That's your coworker on the Power Rankings show now.
Right. And, he's working on that show. He's called himself Money. When I go pick up my child Luke in the afternoons, I listen to Petros and Money. He's announcing Chargers game. This is the one task that's been going on for a decade that he's not received an American penny for. So I could understand the agitation.
Well, you can't pay for this type of publicity that he's been getting connected to this world-renowned podcast. So that's the other way to look at it. It's almost like an unpaid internship for a wildly successful sportscaster.
Okay.
And yes, Money and the old Zeuser every Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on NFL Network, the Power Rankings show. That's been a lot of fun. Boys, it's heating up. The whole season's heating up. As long as we can, you know, dodge the raindrops on this COVID stuff, I'm really starting to enjoy the soap opera that is every NFL season, because we got some real narratives that are heating up as we head to the toward the second half of the season, and we're going to get into a bunch of happenings in the league as we edge closer to week 7. I know you're excited, Mark.
I honestly enjoy this football season more than in the past, because we've come to the razor's edge a few times where it felt like with one more game shifting or postponement that the NFL gets into a huge tangled web. I don't enjoy that tension, but that tension alone makes the games happening. And I, you know, we can talk about obviously the games that happened last night. I don't remember my lifetime watching like a Monday afternoon game in Los Angeles in this time zone taking place like in a drizzly Western New York burg. I thought that was sort of a beautiful thing to be able to do at a really weird time in the day. So thumbs up for me. It's also, you don't have to go into the office. You don't have to get all dressed up. The exhaustion factor is a little bit lower. The appreciation factor is hiked up a little bit.
Well, it's good to be distracted too. This is, you know, it's like there was that concern I remember from the NBA players when they were going to go into their bubble. Are we going to distract from all the important things going on? And it's like, well, yep, this NFL season is totally distracting me.
I am very distracted. I can confirm that. And you're right, Mark. Back when we used to go to the office, when we would put on our penguin suits, you know, get the tuxes on and to sit at our cubicles, way dressed down now compared to then, let's be honest. It wasn't much different in terms of what we're wearing. Maybe shorts versus pants.
I mean, just the whole process of having to go into the office and it's like, hey, it's a head honcho in the break room. You better get in and get your cool comment in. It's like, you know, a lot of that's just been removed from the process.
Oh, I hated those days. All right. A lot to talk about. A quarterback change. Internal drama around America's team. A Thursday night football game to preview. But first, yes, two football games played on Monday. Only one of them actual, the broadcast rights of the Monday night football brand. So let's start with the other one.
I've never seen Andy that mad. And he definitely was not happy about what...
So they go for it on fourth down and get the touchdown. Darrell Williams and Andy Reid is mad no more.
That was Joe Buck, of course, and Troy Aikman starting out with some comments about Andy. Andy was hot there, but I'm sure he had smiles on his face after the game. 26-17, a win for the Chiefs in Orchard Park against the Bills, a rainy day in Western New York that did not play into a positive situation for either quarterback in this game, but only one team handled it best, and that is the Chiefs, the defending champs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire goes 26 for 161 in leading the way, and the Chiefs are 5-1. And all of a sudden, Greg, the Bills are on a two-game losing streak, and Josh Allen... not looking like the Josh Allen of the first 4 weeks of the season.
He hasn't. and you know, he missed some throws early because of the rain. And he made some good decisions, and there was a couple plays that receivers have made in the past. I'm thinking of a third down throw bounces off a receiver's helmet on the first drive. Stephon Diggs isn't able to take in maybe Allen's best throw of the day in the end zone later in the first half, and they only got seven drives. So there's this whole strategy. Well, let's make Mahomes earn it. Let's try to make them earn it with all these rushing yards, and that only works if you can get the Chiefs off the field on third down. And Mahomes hit a third and goal, I think, from the 13 to Kelsey. He hit a third and 15, and he hit a third and 12 later in the game. So suddenly you shorten the game, and you just shorten the time you're about to lose. And so I thought the two strategies that the Bills had in terms of offense and defense didn't really match up because they weren't sharp enough offensively to go along with that strategy that they had defensively.
Yeah, and I think that we're watching in real time a Bills defense that for years has sort of been the linchpin of who they are, and could get them wins when the offense couldn't, you know, do their part, fall apart. I mean, they gave up 466 yards, and you know, sometimes these games have strange little moments. And my favorite drive of the entire season materialized in the third quarter of this one. A third quarter that, you know, sometimes we do like these Sky Sports hits on Sunday, which would come at the end of the third quarter. And you'd think to yourself, because you might not be watching the game that Sky Sports is watching, I could go make a cup of cocoa right now. I could go take a walk around the block. I've got a solid 20 minutes until, you know, you jump on with them. But in this case, the way this quarter, third quarter went, it tripped away in like 2 seconds, because this drive that Kansas City run, the 7-minute 47 march, 13 plays, 87 yards. And I understand that everyone loves the Chiefs because of what Mahomes does acrobatically, artistically, athletically, week after week. I love them switching it up in ugly weather in Western New York and running the ball right down Buffalo's throat. That game, or that drive, ended with that Darrell Williams touchdown that we talked about that, you know, was a balm to Andy Reid, who was ready to flip out on the sideline. It was 20-3. There was plenty of time left. The contest to me felt entirely over at that point.
I just loved Andy Reid on the eve of the World Series throwing a changeup to the Bills. The 46 rushing attempts, which is tied for the most that he's ever called in 21 years as a head coach, accounting for the 245 yards. And sometimes you don't overthink it. I mean, Edwards-Helaire, who obviously is going to have company now with Le'Veon Bell, but you look at what they were able to do, and you wonder whether Bell should be jumping into the mix. He will be obviously involved in some capacity, but you would think this is a game you want to build off with Edwards-Helaire. And the other thought that I had was, yes, the downside of not turning Patrick Mahomes loose, and maybe you couldn't because of the conditions, and not letting him be the mad bomber that just destroys teams with deep strikes. The one thing that the negative of that is that the game's going to probably stay closer and it's going to stay tight. So when the Bills got that score to get it to 6 points, under most circumstances, you might start to get a little bit nervous. You're going to get this game taken out from under you. But with Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, everything's fine as long as nobody else messes up. And Edwards-Helaire nearly did with a fumble that was rightly called back because his knee was down. But Mahomes made the plays, and the Bills defense is a capital A, capital P problem right now. They can't get a big stop.
Right. Their defensive line has been bad all year. Really, they have problems everywhere. They miss Matt Milano, certainly, but one guy, you know, at linebacker is not going to change this whole defense. There's no juice in terms of their pass rush pressure, and they're a team that doesn't love to send extra guys. So Jerry Hughes, he's sort of defied time for years. Maybe he's getting a little older. Mm. You give Trent Murphy a healthy scratch last night. He's one of the highest cap numbers on your team. Ed Oliver hasn't totally popped. They're kind of an easy team to run against. And then they're a little thinner in the back end, too, where I think Norman can be picked on. Teron Johnson, their slot corner, can be picked on. That all said, I mean, it was varsity JV, like Steelers-Browns to me, even though it didn't show up that way. It was 466 yards to 206. With that said, I still think Mahomes gets most of the credit because he's the one, and a lot of times calling these plays, you know, deciding to run because he looks and he's staying patient. And again, like on that game-winning field goal drive, it takes him extending the play on 3rd and 13 and hitting that throw to make that sort of strategy work, because the Bills did stop the Chiefs running the ball on their last two drives, and it takes Mahomes kind of bailing them out after two early down runs in the red zone with that beautiful throw to Kelce. So that's like the start of it all, and then you just play smart and you have a good running game, and you lose Mitchell Schwartz, and you're all having new guys in the interior offensive line too. So it's like running the ball is smart, but it all starts with Mahomes. I think next week though, it's like the Broncos, they're going to keep teams are going to keep running this strategy where it's like, okay, run for 200 yards and we'll take our chances.
But it did remind me, I like the varsity JV comparison there, because like Pittsburgh and Cleveland, I thought that the Chiefs, forget the score, as you mentioned, yeah. Dan, they broke them. I think they tamed them. They silenced them. You're watching Daniel Kilgore at center just maul whatever Buffalo put up against, and they were running for 8 yards per carry. So sometimes it's the matchup too. And you trust Reed to, if there's a soft belly in Buffalo's defense, he just went after it over and over. And the one thing about the Chiefs, Travis Kelce had a pretty killer fumble at the end of the half. That kind of thing gets in the heads of some teams. Kelce was furious about that. They mentioned it, that he came out, that he was jawing at everyone in the locker room, because he's had some up and down moments in this early season. But by the end of halftime, he's hugging Eric Bieniemy. They're composed. They're back in action, and they totally exert their will. This is a different team. You play the Chiefs, and they put you in your tier. And I think they put Buffalo in their tier in the AFC. You're not right at Kansas City's level at any point right now.
Especially offensively. They're a team that needs to score 30 points a week. In the last 2 weeks, their offense hasn't done it.
And yet the Raiders put the Chiefs in their place in Kansas City's previous game, which just speaks to, you know, the week-to-week nature of our league. But yeah, the Chiefs are fun to watch, their offense especially. It's just so layered. Okay, let's get to the late game.
Here's 1st and 10. Kyler Murray, a deep shot, got a man and it's caught. Christian Kirk, how about 80 yards to the house just like that?
ESPN, Steve Levy with the call. Are the Cardinals good or are the Cowboys terrible? Maybe both. All right, the Cardinals, 38. Cowboys, 10. Kyler Murray in his homecoming. He grew up in North Texas. 3 touchdowns, including, yes, that rain ball. Beautiful deep strike to Christian Kirk. 80 yards. That effectively settled matters in the second quarter. And, Mark, the defense took it home from there, befuddling Andy Dalton and Buda Baker out front with a tremendous game. Sack, pick, forced fumble, 2 QB hits. Total effort by the Cardinals, and the Cowboys are throwing a mess.
Yeah, I mean, this is another game where I think the matchup just was a disaster for Dallas, where I believe Erica Tamposi had a couple snaps at right guard at one point. Zach Martin went down. There's nothing along the Dallas line. But yet, this is not a pick on Andy Dalton game for me, because week after week.
Why do you assume I'm like an offensive lineman? Like I'm that big?
Well, I think they were needing.
Why wouldn't
people?
I be like a tiny like cornerback that's super
fast? A scat back.
Well, I think you weren't big enough because
like a super foxy scat back.
Yeah, or like the hot quarterback.
I'll rethink my position area for you to play when you get into the game.
This is Mark's final show.
Yes, I'll be seeing you later. I mean, I watching this Cowboys defense week after week, and it's there's a 3rd and 10 play, and it's like kind of a child knows that at this point with the Cardinals trying to work their way out of a little bit of a funk, that you're going to lean on your biggest strength, and it's 3rd and 10, and Kyler Murray scrambles for a first down. There's a later play where it's 4th and 1, and Kyler Murray rushes for 11 yards with literally nobody around him at all. And to me, that's the Dallas defense. And we'll get into some of the stuff going on there, but it is as if they had never perceived of Kyler Murray, or never that maybe someone like Little Debbie is watching more Kyler Murray tape and more Cardinals tape than Dallas does. They look completely disorganized, and it was only a matter of time where once their offense starts creating their own mistakes, and Zeke Elliott, now that's a different type of fumble. The look on his face when he had his first fumble was one of dejection and one of this team is lost already, completely different to what I just mentioned about Kelce. I think this team was broken early in this game too.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, from the Cardinals side, in, like, we'll pick on Dalton. Like you said, this is not a pick on Dalton game. Well, why not? I mean, he was awful.
Oh, he's
I
bad. Think,
I mean, so he bad. Have you seen a guy stare down more open receivers and not let go of the ball? I know
right,
the line
just
was
not
bad.
Alone on Dalton.
No,
which is an easy
I get it. But to
do.
Me, the Cowboys defense is only going
to
make a handful of stops every game, maybe in a row. And they did that like four drives in a row to start the game. And Zeke is giving the ball away. So you're totally done then. If Zeke is giving the ball away and Dalton was trying to give the ball away and the Cardinals wouldn't take it early, like that's it. You're only going to get so many stops. Then the defense collapsed. And it's a total mess. I do think, though, with Murray, I give the I'm not going to pick on them too much because to me he's like the fastest at like quarterback. And I know Lamar Jackson was just a year ago, and Kyler's similar, but just as fast and is better at avoiding hits. Like some of those plays are almost unstoppable. And Kyler Murray and their passing game is still a problem. Like he completed less than half his passes and they need to be more consistent in general. But some of those play calls where like he tosses it to himself on a fake toss, I don't know. No one's going to stop that. Yeah. It makes them so dangerous. I'm not sure about their defense and I'm not sure about their passing offense. But man, their running game should be good like each week.
It didn't show on Monday night because Dallas has so many issues right now, but Chandler Jones not being there is going to hurt them. And they have a huge measuring stick game against the Seahawks coming up. So they're going to enter that game with a lot of confidence because of how well they played in this game, and they deserve it. On the Cowboys side of things, and by the way, I think Kyler's helmet is about 10% smaller this year. Hmm. The proportion is still off where it does still feel like it's like a ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding when he's like scampering down the sideline. But I think he has a little less wind resistance on that helmet, and that's leading to better production with his legs. That's just the theory.
A little less of a spaceman's helmet than in previous
right. Not to be a child of the 80s, but you remember in what was it, Spaceballs, when Rick Moranis had the giant Darth Vader helmet. Still kind of has that vibe a little bit, but that's...
What do I need to know more about you that you saw Spaceballs but have never seen Star Wars? That is like the most clear-cut Dan Hansis like differentiator out there.
I didn't get a lot of the jokes, but it was a great sight gag. The helmet was so big. All right, Cowboys. Whoa, what a mess. And as bad as they looked, and Dalton did look lost, and maybe, you know, we talked about it, it was the reckoning for the Dalton scale. But the one thing, and Wes pointed it out on Twitter, that game was in primetime, too. It was his first start in primetime. He always stinks like that. We got to get him into some early Sunday games, and he'll start lighting it up with CD and Gallup and Cooper. I still think Dalton's going to have good numbers there, but he was right, real maybe. Bad. Real bad on Monday. Now, NFL Network's Jane Slater reported on Tuesday that players are starting to speak out about their unhappiness behind the scenes. One player told Slater that Mike McCarthy's staff is, quote, totally unprepared. They don't teach. They don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly. Another player told Slater they just aren't good at their jobs. And, Greg, this does... summon memories.
Not good at their jobs.
Yeah. It summons memories of that hit piece on McCarthy near the end of his Packers reign, where that thing was winding down and there was some issues behind the scenes there. And there was the report, I think, was it that Mike McCarthy was getting a full body massage while team meeting was supposed to happen or something, like stuff like that. And the players are unhappy. The fact that it's happening this early in the Dallas tenure when they're playing so poorly, this is not a good sign.
No, my favorite part of that report is, you know, the Cowboys players, they'd been, you know, all in lockstep at keeping this in-house for a while, but, you know, they couldn't wait anymore. Here we are, week six. Let's absolutely bury our coaches. It's delightful. I like the theory proposed by the Athletic's Bob Sturm, who I like a lot, that this is still Jason Garrett's fault, that the country club culture where the players are like the kings and are always right is still permeating in this franchise. And I would agree just a little bit with that and give it a little more, you know, higher up at Jerry Jones, where I do think the way
I thought you were joking, but no, that's a serious theory. Okay.
No, that was a serious theory.
Okay.
I do think there is something to this team where they are superstars. They believe their own hype, that the players are always prioritized over the coaches. That's not a secret since Jimmy Johnson's been there, because the ownership, they always have the ownership's ear. And I think they're, because of that, they feel emboldened somewhat to talk like this about the guys who can bench you. And so I do think there's something to it. Doesn't mean that the players aren't right, and that the coaches are doing a poor job. I think the worst thing you can do as a coach is try to have your scheme and fit the players that are there into your scheme no matter what, despite what they're good at. And I think that's what we're seeing here. Like in Nolan's scheme, it's like you need these big guys up front to occupy blockers. And it's like they don't have those guys. And that's why people are just cutting through them. And you see the communication breakdowns in the secondary. They've allowed the most points through 6 weeks since integration. That's the way I thought put on Twitter last night.
Integration was the divine.
That was
line?
The way they put it. Yeah. So I think it was the 40s. Okay. I mean, I think that just puts you in a mental space.
Long time ago.
It was a little bit of a different NFL the last time this many points were given up. And
I would just point to, like, so Mike McCarthy, it's about a year ago that our reporter, NFL Network, star at this point, Tom Pelissero, wrote that think piece, I guess you would call it, on Mike McCarthy about the epiphanies he was having, that he maybe read a book on analytics and had a whole new window into what that could offer. And then he goes down and, you know, the Cowboys don't go and look at out of the box people. Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy fall in love with each other over the course of a day and drinks at Jerry Jones's house, and they hire Mike McCarthy. And then you look at how Jerry Jones started in the NFL by firing Tom Landry, which was sacrilegious in Dallas, obviously. But to get a totally raw, fresh NFL face in Jimmy Johnson, who comes from Miami and is a culture hammer, he changes things. And it isn't players talking over coaches and all that stuff. But ever since then, kind of like, you know, when you move away from, like, we've talked about this before, he went completely other end of the spectrum after the breakup with Jimmy Johnson, and he proceeds to hire Barry Switzer, who just inherits, like George Seifert did in San Francisco, a good roster, and after being caught eating a hot dog on the sideline during the Pro Bowl, goes and wins a Super Bowl with Jimmy Johnson's players the next year, okay? Then they hire Chan Gailey, Dave Campo, Bill Parcells, nice hire, Wade Phillips, Jason Garrett, and now Mike McCarthy. These are all essentially old school veteran coaches that aren't going to bring something new. And Mike McCarthy, after selling, I think, Jimmy Johnson a bill of goods about being this new coach, and, you know, time will tell, goes and hires Nolan, who couldn't be more of an old school, old boys, friend of friends pick for your defensive coordinator. I mean, I think some of these seeds were sown when Jerry Jones refused to broaden a net and look for someone that could change Cowboys culture.
Jerry Jones turned 78 last week, and he is not blameless in this. And it's beyond just who he's choosing as the coach, because Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan will end up being fall guys if this thing really goes off the rails. And it might even be a one-and-done situation. Who knows? Because, like I said, Jared just turned 78. And the clock's ticking, and he wants results. And if this thing continues to spiral and players are, you know, abandoning the ship, it might force the hand of ownership. And I think one thing, it's, while I don't think McCarthy was necessarily an exhilarating hire, I feel like he is a bit of a scapegoat here because he didn't inherit a good defense. And Mike Nolan is being asked to make do with a defense that doesn't have a lot of parts. And then you factor in a ton of injuries that have compounded the situation and put the Cowboys now behind the eight ball. They had a roster that had holes and now a viciously depleted roster because of injury. So it to me, it's kind of, you can't put it on one thing. It's everything that's kind of come together as a poop sandwich in Dallas, and maybe McCarthy and Nolan are the fall guys here, but there's a lot of things that have come into play here.
But they're spending a lot of money on defense. I mean, the Everson Griffin signing hasn't worked, but DeMarcus Lawrence is one of the highest paid defensive linemen in the league and is really struggling. Alden Smith has been an amazing signing. Jalen Smith has really struggled, is making a lot of money. Van Der Esch is a key piece. He's there. I mean, they're not without talent. They have some high draft picks in the secondary. So I think a lot of it's coaching. A ton of it is injuries, of course. I mean, the offensive line is decimated. But I really was annoyed how often we heard last night how the Cowboys weren't expecting that much of a drop-off after going to Dalton. It's like BS. They pay one guy $31 million and the other guy $3 million, and you're not expecting much of a drop-off? You should expect a lot of a drop-off. You should know what you have with Dak Prescott. And it was a reminder to all the clowns who are always like, well, you know, well, with a lot of this, you know, production is like when they're coming back in games or it's down 30. It's like playing quarterback and putting up a lot of points is hard no matter what the score is. And I think we were reminded, you know, you see that watching terrible offenses every week that can't do it, whether it's garbage time or not. We saw last night, it's like Andy Dalton was bad at every point of the game. Like they didn't start scoring points once they were way down. And they shouldn't need a reminder how good Dak is. I actually don't think they really did. I think he'll always be there. But, man, there's no way they'll ever let Dak go if this season goes how I think it's going to go.
I'd be shocked. Yeah. I don't think it creates more indecision about Dak, this injury. I think it just hammers home the certainty that they're going to give him the world and be like, all right, save us, which maybe isn't the best way to look at it either, because they were having issues when Dak was lighting up the world. They just have so much work to do.
I mean, probably the biggest like career jolt, I think we're all kind of, we get where we are with Andy Dalton, but there's a lot of flowery talk about this is the, you know, opportunity for Andy Dalton to show that he should be a starter next season for another team. I mean, that's fine. And he couldn't, I mean, outside of the offensive line, he's never been surrounded with this type of starry weaponry, but it's still Andy Dalton. And a team that goes and signs Andy Dalton as their starter next year is going to get this player. And so I never signed up for that narrative.
If he plays like last night, no one's signing.
Sure, now we have that information. But a week ago, it was like, hey, he threw the ball aggressively to Michael Gallup at the end of last game. Maybe this is a new Dalton, and he's going to get, you know, great audition. And the whole thing is
week to week league.
Exactly,
though.
Exactly.
The storylines
become absurd within 4 days.
Because he's not going
days.
Anywhere either. He's going to continue to be there. I still think he's going to put up numbers, but Andy Dalton in primetime or in a playoff game has never been.
I'm just annoyed all their games are going to matter so much because the NFC East. Right. It's funny because they keep showing the standings and how embarrassing it is, but I don't think people even understand how embarrassing, because most of those wins they have are against each other. The division is 2-15-1 right now outside the division, and both those wins were just by the skin of their teeth, including that onside kick recovery. 2-15-1. They're basically the worst team in the NFL as a division.
All right, stick a pin in that, because we have a great Thursday night football game coming up, and we're going to preview that at the end of the show. But first, there's a little bit more news to get to. It revolves around the Miami Dolphins, who, despite coming off two resounding victories that have moved them into the playoff race, into the AFC East race. How about that? They make the move. Tua is the new quarterback, starting quarterback of the team. Ryan Fitzpatrick heads to the bench, and man, it makes too much sense to get the thoughts on the Dolphins straight from the most famous Dolphins fan in Westchester area of Los Angeles. That is the great Henry Hodgson, the vice president of international here in NFL media and late of the Dave Damashek football program. He's got a mic and he's got a platform and you know he's going to deliver. Did you love it, Hank? What'd you think of the decision by the Dolphins?
I am super excited. Hello, friend. It's nice to see you all. I thought I was here to talk about Moritz Boehringer, so I'm not totally prepared for this. But
ambush interview with Hank.
we'll try and speak about Tua instead. No, I'm super excited. From the moment that he threw that 2-yard dump off to Patrick Laird, it was clear that this was a man who's destined for greatness. So I'm extremely excited.
How about the rollout throw to his left actually was pretty good. I mean, I immediately thought, like, he is quick. And you know what? There's not a single NFL player who can make that throw that is starting on Sundays, because none of them are left-handed. Like, for real. There is something to that, I feel like.
That's
literally
true.
It's impossible for the others.
I do think that, you know, that the NFL is a better place when there are left-handed quarterbacks in the league. Having a left-handed quarterback around is fun. It looks strange. People get freaked out by the whole thing, but that's exciting in itself. But, I mean, other than that, this is something that Dolphins fans, you know, they started talking about Tua being a Dolphins player in, like, 2018. And it's taken all this time, you know, took the time, and then they tanked for Tua last year, apparently, although, you know, it didn't really work out the way it did, but then he got injured. Then they managed to be in position to draft him without having to trade up or doing anything else. And then there's this feeling of, okay, he's here now. When do we actually get to see him? And the pressure's been building and building and building over the last few weeks. People were obviously, you know, wanted to see him in the back half of that, defeat of the 49ers a couple weeks ago, and that didn't happen. So I was kind of, I'd counted it out as I was, I think, one of the only people in the world watching the Jets Dolphins game, rightly, by the way, anyone who decided to choose Packers Buccaneers instead. And then it happened, and it was super exciting. And now we've got to wait another 12 days to see it again. But I think it'll be, it's like the 12 days of Christmas. It'll be
worth
it,
Henry, by the time we get there. Do you think that, because there's, you know, people out there, like, I get the, it's an abrupt switch because Fitzpatrick is Fitzpatrick. He's got good energy. He's been playing lights out. They've been winning. And so some thinking, why are you making this switch? I get why a Dolphins fan, Dolphins sneaky gone without a quarterback that really generated, like, metropolitan energy in Miami since Dan Marino. I'm not putting Ryan Tannehill in that class at all or anyone else.
2020 MVP Ryan Tannehill.
Well, right. Not in Miami, though, please. But do you think that this was the plan in terms of the timing from the very beginning, saying no matter what Fitzpatrick's doing, barring if Tua progresses, as we think from the summer on, we're making the switch before the bye week to fully integrate him and give him the best chance to start versus on the fly, which is, you know, this happened at a weird time, but maybe this was the plan all along.
Can I just jump in real quick? It turns out that there's three people in this podcast that watch the Jets Dolphins in real time on Sunday, which you can't find a grouping of three people anywhere else in the world that could say that. Before you take it, Henry, Ryan Fitzpatrick didn't play very well on Sunday. I thought that maybe could have been a factor. 24-0, it got papered over and the Jets are miserable. But with the bye week combined with the fact that they struggled on third down, he threw some bad passes, he had some interceptions, I wonder if that played in at all as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins have had three wins, but in those three wins, Fitz has had three good halves, and then the second half in each of them has been a little bit disappointing. Some of that is because they were so far in front against all three clubs, against the Jags, the Niners, and the Jets this week, that they took their foot off the gas a bit. But Fitz, I think you're right, Dan, did not look good against the Jets. I think in terms of timing, they moved the bye week. So originally, I think the Dolphins had like a week 11 bye, and then as part of all the reshuffle a couple of weeks ago, their bye got moved to week 6. So that may have made them think that this was the right time to do it. I think overall, though, and this is a point I was making this morning to Dan's chagrin on Twitter, the point that I think when the Dolphins hired Brian Flores, they gave him a 5-year guaranteed contract, which doesn't typically happen for head coaches. You know, it's guaranteed that you get all 5 years. It's often like a 3 or 4 year contract with options. And then they gave him permission to make a bunch of trades, or him and Chris Greer, the general manager, to make a bunch of trades last year. I think the first 2 years were essentially like write-offs. Let's go build this team and mold it. It's the youngest team in the NFL right now. So Fitz getting to like 9-7,
right,
this year, if you leave him in there, you wind up being in the same spot as you were in before, as one of those teams that floats between 7-9 and 9-7, and you're in that miserable mid-pack of the NFL. So let Tua go and make the mistakes. If this year doesn't matter, it was actually what happened in the first year with Adam Gase, where they accidentally went to the playoffs, and then as a result of that, expectations get reset the whole way through. You might as well let someone learn on the job, let someone potentially fail, find out what you've got in your piece, and then, you know, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, go into 2021 with a quarterback who can you know, take you further than 9-7.
Or do both. I mean, I think they can win this division with Tua.
Yep,
I think I think they got a shot. I think the Bills are the favorites, but seeing that the Dolphins are 10th in DVOA right now, it doesn't surprise me. They've won three games by blowout. They're doing some really well-coached, exciting things. I think you got to make the move because the only thing that matters, the thing that matters most this year is developing Tua. And so they're watching him every day. If they think he's ready to play now, and they didn't obviously in week one, then you play him. Like, I'm just going to trust Brian Flores. He's been a good coach. And that's the number one thing. Initially, it reminded me of the Giants. I remember being in New York when they benched Kurt Warner at 5-4, I think was the record for Eli. And Eli came in and they were suddenly the worst offense in the league. And he was the worst quarterback in the league. But you know what? Eli said all throughout his career that that experience made him so much better. And he came into his year two way better. He took a massive leap and he said that experience was part of it. So if they think Tua is ready, you don't want to put him in a bad situation. But I kind of think the fact that they're a decent team around him makes me want to play him even more. Win exactly. With Tua.
Well, and the other bit, Greg and I have a long text chain which focuses solely on the Miami Dolphins offensive line, or at least sexy. Has done over the last few weeks. It's pretty exciting.
Greg has that with all 32 teams with different sure. people. He just loves it so much.
But I think that's played into it as well. The Dolphins have three rookies starting on the offensive line, but they have been surprisingly better than expected. And so I think, again, with the bye week being moved up, with the offensive line looking certainly a lot better than it did a year ago, they feel confident that Tua, who's now a year removed from that injury, who's obviously had time to pick up the playbook even without training camp and everything that happened, like, now's the time. And Greg's right, you know, Fitz is the 20th best quarterback. I don't know who, where the QB index, where Wes has him this week, but he's been floating at, you know, somewhere between 32 and 20, let's say. Tua has the upside. So why not put the guy in who could potentially take you further this year, but definitely can do in future years.
Here's another theory, Hank, before we say goodbye, because I know you have an important vice president of international stuff to tend to. Does this announcement go down, or does this report come out today? If the Bills don't lose yesterday and all of a sudden they're thinking in Miami, okay, we're 3-3. Our defense is getting better. We're certified frisky. Over in LA, they get the Herbert lift. What if Tua is ready? We get the Tua lift and we can steal this damn division. I initially didn't like it. And maybe because I like Ryan Fitzpatrick, but it might as well start the future while also potentially bettering the present, because it maybe puts the ceiling a little bit higher.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that plays into it. I definitely think that the division's more open than we thought it was 2 weeks ago before the Bills lost two on the trot. So
how about that,
it's,
Hank?
It's exciting.
Listen to this conversation we're having in week 7 of 2020.
But Dan, you know, for you, this is, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you were able to be excited because you had a new young quarterback who'd done nothing. And you know, 3 years from now, the chances are, as a broken Dolphins fan, I'll probably be sitting feeling the same way about my team as you. But I'm enjoying today, because yeah, if nice. You can't enjoy today, then you can't enjoy anything.
Before you go, Henry, I want you to enjoy something else, because, you know, you're very humble, but you're a key member of this international pathway program. I feel like it's been a big year for the international players. Mailata's in there for the Eagles. Never played football before. He's playing left tackle. You got Jakob Johnson. You got a Patriots starting offensive lineman.
Greg's arm behind his back and said, you better get that pathway program
The pathway program's taken over him.
But Henry, why not bring Greg on to your, you know, highfalutin meeting to pitch what he's just said here? It sounds like he might be promoted. You might be promoted for the eighth time passionate. Since I've known you. I mean, you know, everyone wins.
Well, yes, thank you, Mark. No, Mike, look, I'm super excited about the player pathway program, and Greg is exactly right. There, you know, Jordan Mailata had never played a down of football before. He came into the NFL. The first time he went to a football game, he was playing in it. That in itself is a pretty remarkable thing. And so, yeah, super excited for him, for Jakob Johnson. Lots of new things coming from international players.
What happens to the international players who don't work out? Are they silently removed from the equation and never seen from again? Maybe put deep below the earth?
No. They go back to their home countries and hone their craft to get better. And if nothing else, to take the coaching on that they've learned in the NFL to bring some new people. Yeah, so that's what I'm telling you. One more thing, Dan, because I know you're a Fitz fan. Can I just say this? How's this for a little theory that's coming? Fitz, the who you know, Tua was his apprentice, becomes the apprentice to Chan Gailey, who's I think in his late 70s, to take over as the Dolphins offensive coordinator a year or two from now, Kellen Moore style, and goes on to a NFL coaching career. By the time he retires as an NFL head coach in 30 years, he hasn't shaved his beard once during that whole time, and it's down below his knees.
I don't know. I see his Fitzpatrick as maybe as a Renaissance man that wants to do other things outside the football world. I'm also not convinced he's not going to be still playing when he's 50. Hey, one more thing, Henry. Since you're the pathway guy, Ricky, hit it.
And now, another edition of Keeping Up with Bowen.
So, what do you got?
I don't have anything on Moritz right now, I'm afraid, guys. I mean, he has gone back. You know, the Schwabish Hall unicorns will be welcoming back with open arms to go play wide receiver, tight end, and pass on a lot of his experience from the NFL so that young unicorns can join the player pathway program in the future.
Hit it, Ricky.
And that is another edition of Keeping Up with Bowen.
All right, Henry. We love you, buddy. Miss you.
It's lovely to see you guys. Take care. Love to you all, to Wes, if he's listening as well. And we'll catch up soon.
Have fun at your corporate meeting.
Thank you, Mark. If you want to join, you know, feel free to jump in.
No, I'm satisfied on that front.
There he goes. The king of Britain, the king of the international program, Henry Hodgson. Always good to see and hear from Hank. All right, before we sign off, as we mentioned earlier, NFC East is a dump. It's like a floating dump off Staten Island right now. And everybody is puzzled how it could have gotten this bad. This is how bad it's gotten. We'll start it out this way, Mark. The Giants play the Eagles on Thursday night on Fox and NFL Network, 5:20 p.m. Pacific, 8:20 Eastern. Both teams are still in good shape and alive if they lose, even though they only have one win. In week 7.
It's incredibly messy. And I think, you know, Greg, you put it well. It's in messy to unprecedented levels. That said, the Eagles, after this Giants game, go play the Cowboys, then have their bye, then come back from their bye rested to play the Giants again, potentially healthier. That could get them to 4-4-1 if they took care of business against three bad teams. Suddenly, you know, I'm not buying into any of these teams. I would like an angry, like alien mothership to come take all four of these college level operations and remove them until 2021. But the one element I still want to believe in is Carson Wentz, who has been, you know, there are a lot of young quarterbacks in bad situations, and I wouldn't call Carson Wentz a young quarterback right now the same way, but the unprecedented word should be attached to the injuries that are around him. The line, it's the second year in a row, and suddenly, like, will Miles Sanders be around? I mean, the team is so banged up that the only thing I can hope for is some sort of Carson Wentz Thursday night playmaking magic with their fleet of interesting third stringers against the Giants defense that's looked pretty good, frankly. Like, I think the Giants defense, I'm not saying that it's a great defense. It's just improved from their completely identity black hole that they operated in for the last 7 years.
It's a recipe for a very unwatchable game because I agree with you. I think the Giants defense should be able to slow down Philadelphia, who's down so many offensive linemen. Since we've last recorded, we learned Zach Ertz is out 3 to 4 weeks. I don't even know if that hurts them so much as ineffective as he was, but I mean, it's not a good thing.
Doesn't help Carson Wentz.
Right. Miles Sanders is out this week. So they're down to two of their original starters, although actually they might get DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey back for this game, which is interesting. It'll be a different look. We'll see how much that matters.
I mean, DeSean Jackson is like Amelia Earhart at this point. She might return to society.
I don't think he's played in 14 years.
So
I'm convinced.
NFC East, when I was watching the Cowboys last night and they were talking about the NFC East, I suddenly had this weird vision of like Joe Judge celebrating because the 6-10 Giants just won the NFC. I don't know why it felt like a Mark Sessler vision, because it just like felt like, well, which team is like healthy enough and has like a couple things I like? Like James Bradbury's playing like an all-pro. Darius Slayton is a legit starting wide receiver. I mean,
Shepard's coming
it's
back.
It's probably apparently not good that they had 46 snaps last week and Devontae Freeman was featured on 20 of them. That feels like a ratio you don't want in 2020, although he's looked a little better. But they don't look terribly coached. They're like mostly in these games and they're just healthier. So maybe I was like, well, like, maybe the Giants win 5 or 6 games and they win this division.
Could happen. I think there's... Giants fans are already annoyed and they want to be in the tank for Trevor conversation. But, you know, Jones has just made, I think he's made 18 starts and he's got a new head coach and a new scheme. You got to see this whole season through before even beginning to think about rebooting again. So this is a good for the Giants. They're not going to the Super Bowl. They're most likely not going to pull the Joe Judge Gatorade bath at 6-10. But it's still going to be an important season for them in terms of trying to figure out what they have on both sides of the ball. I don't – this game, though, is
the Eagles' front looks good. I mean, their defense is mostly healthy, and they're pretty good, which is why I think it'll be so ugly. You figure they would be able to slow down the Giants, who are mostly now like they wish Daniel Jones was Lamar Jackson, and like his miles per hour, I saw some next gen thing, was like the fastest any quarterback's run all year, and he is fast as hell, but he does not have the running instincts as Lamar. And it's like when Daniel Jones running is the primary thing in your offense, you're probably in trouble.
How about this, Carson Wentz? Thursday night against a putrid Giants team. Is this game's in Philly too, right? I know things are weird this year, but go light up the Giants. You're going to have the two veterans back, hopefully. Fulgham has turned into a guy you can trust. No Ertz. Down their top two tight ends, actually, right now. But it's the Giants. Deliver a game where you have 4 scores. You throw for 300 yards. You run for 30. You don't have a turnover. And just like put together that game against this opponent and kind of get people feeling better inside that building about you and the chances in what's been a pretty hellish season so far.
I mean, they almost beat Baltimore. I would say one thing from an NFL fan perspective, you know, 30 plus years of watching this game, if a team ever won the division, a division at 5-11, it would be one of the greatest things I've ever witnessed, and I would be all in on that playoff game. I'm not saying time after time, but in one season, if that happened, yes.
The Seahawks in 2011 or 10 went 7-9 and won a playoff game on the Beastquake, right?
So remember the Carolina team went, what, 7-8-1?
They won a playoff game too.
So just what, you know, football's weird, man. Don't be surprised if something crazy happens. But there you go. Thursday Night Football. Check out Connie Fox, of course, on NFL Network. She anchors, in fact, coverage pregame, halftime, postgame. How about a little Connie Fox? Who do we want Connie Fox sitting down with? I'd like to get to know Daniel Jones to see if he has a little more personality. How about Daniel Jones after a win? With Connie Fox, and they're just chopping it up and having fun.
Connie Fox, the Eagles fan, I would preferably give her an Eagles player. Carson Wentz would fit.
But that's a little more entertaining, though, isn't it? Just to have Connie having a...
I mean, I see where you're going.
Grind her teeth through it.
Wentz not too entertaining. Daniel Jones not too entertaining. Trying to think of a wacky Eagle.
How about
Maybe Deshaun Jackson has a big game. I can see him chopping it up, having some fun.
Yeah. She interviews the hamstrings. How you doing, man? She's like, oh, it's been a tough 31 years, but...
Alshon Jeffrey is like, I'm so glad that Deshaun Jackson's taking all the heat in this injured Eagles convo. I haven't done anything since the Super Bowl.
Oh, it was a great Super Bowl, though. All right. Good stuff. Good football combo. Yes, we'll be back on Thursday with 2 shows, the Week 7 preview. That's the big one where we go through every game ahead on the slate on Sunday and Monday. Hopefully no Tuesday or Wednesday Night Football. Right now that is not the case. And then also we will have a mini pod that goes up late Thursday recapping the Eagles-Giants affair. So there you go. All right, how's everybody feeling? In general.
I feel great.
One thumb up.
I'm
doing good. I got this new fancy water bottle that tells me to drink. It'll be like, get started. Remember your goal.
Aisha has something like that too.
I'm drinking a lot of water.
The season is a good, not distraction, but just like gets us in this mode. Too much idle time right now. It gets us like, you know, the election will just be here before we know it. We're cranking through this remote school year. I mean, we just need to get through this as quickly as possible.
Exactly.
And enjoy the ride.
Exactly. Ricky, and you're drinking water and you're making the right decisions. You'll never be an offensive lineman like that. So that's good.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm drinking a gallon of water a day. I'm trying to do it for like a month. It's hard to get through this whole show without running to the bathroom 30 times. I'm gonna, all right. Not going to lie.
Tell us more.
Yeah.
That is a struggle.
So when you drink all that.
All right. Let's go. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Ricky Hollywood, Quiet Storm, the old boss, Handsome Hank. Oh, what an appearance by the handsome. Until Thursday.